What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding?
This is Peace Talks, a series of programs exploring peacemaking and nonviolent solutions to conflict. Psalm 34, verse 13 says simply, "Seek peace and pursue it." Today on Peace Talks, an artist who seeks peace and pursues it in her work, a conversation with Catherine Bloom.
I'm Suzanne Kreider. There's an old saying, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. But does that ring true when the problem is so insidious, like poverty, environmental degradation, or war, that it pervades the entire world? Today we'll explore what motivates an individual to be part of the solution, to act for peace and justice. Our guest is New York actor Catherine Bloom, co-founder of the worldwide Lysistrata Project, artistic director of her own production company, Mighty Ruckus, and creator of her one-woman show, The Accidental Activist. We'll talk with Catherine about what fuels her activism and how others can take small or even large steps to promote peace. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi.
What's the biggest impediment to activism?
I think it's fear more than anything else. And fear hooks into overwhelm. You know, you see the scope of the problem, a species being destroyed, or, you know, the loss of coral reefs, or massive planetary changes in weather, or huge governmental structures that are set up to, you know, benefit the few and don't care for the majority of people. And you think, oh my God, that's too overwhelming. There's no way I can get involved with that. And what will happen to me if I try? And what will happen if I fail? Because the likelihood probably is that I'm going to fail, and then that'll destroy me personally, and I couldn't bear that. And so I think I'm going to have a cookie and watch TV. And, you know, it's very, very easy to fall into that place. We've all done it.
And so it's like you're stuck.
Yeah.
You're stuck between I can't do this because it would be too good, or I can't do this because it won't work.
Or it would be too much work, or I'm going to become a target of people's hatred, or it's too much responsibility and I don't know how to deal with all of that stuff. You know, once you start looking into trying to address such a huge problem, it takes over your life. And that's another piece of it, you know. And for me personally, I think I've struggled with this a lot. My deepest passion lying in the theater. But to try to build a career as an actor takes all of your time. And how do you have anything left over to give anything other than $35 to your favorite organization?
So what is the creative's role in activism? Do they have a different role than people who are not so talented or creative?
I love that question. Well, for one thing, I think everybody is talented and creative. But I think for people who have cultivated their creativity as the primary focus of their life, they have the capability to imagine the world as it could be and then to express that imagining for other people. And so there are a lot of people out there who can articulate very clearly, and I'm sure better than I can and better than a lot of artists can, the details of the problems that exist right now. They're very good at saying, okay, this is what is. But the artist, the creative, can say this is what's possible. And not even be caught in the practicality issues of, well, how could that be possible? Because this, and this need to be in place, and then this thing needs to happen over there. We say, you know what? I'm just going to provide the vision of what's possible. And you know, it's sort of like the whole issue of peace in the Middle East. And I've heard it said as a sort of planetary maxim, there will never be peace in the Middle East. Well, that's a horrible way to think about things. But also, maybe it's not possible for there to be peace right now. But maybe if we operate under the assumption that peace will be possible in the future, then we need to prepare ourselves. And imagining what that could look like is a part of it.
But what do you say to the debunkers who say, well, it's just a fantasy. It's a waste of our time. You're not living in reality. Human beings are really animals, and conflict is natural.
All of that's true. And miracles are possible. And I don't mean miracles in a sort of heavens opening way, but the common everyday miracles of people doing amazing things. And I think the world's response after 9/11 was pretty miraculous. And in New York, the two institutions that people complained about the most, the police department and the mayor's office, became heroic. You know, they were sort of operating from their best selves. And people who had been in constant conflict and judgment towards the mayor and the police were supporting them because everybody was operating from a sense of wanting to help and wanting to ease people's suffering. We have seen so many examples of people doing amazing things and change happening where we wouldn't have thought change was possible. You have to have faith that it works over the long run.
You demonstrate all of your talents in your one-woman show, The Accidental Activist, and it's the story of your response to the impending war in Iraq. Would you be willing to perform an excerpt from the beginning of your show that describes how your path as an activist started in November 2002?
Sure. It's November 2002. I'm having a hard time. My last acting gig was playing an exuberant but thoroughly undisciplined dog, and that was many woofs ago. I have a raging case of tendonitis, which makes typing feel like torture from the ninth canto of hell, and because most of the interviews I transcribe these days go something like this. Middle-aged white man who takes himself far too seriously. I mean journalist. War, war, war. Iraq, Afghanistan, Iraq. Mullah, 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 war. Terrorism, Saddam. Harvard-educated Middle Eastern, Middle East expert. War, war, war. Terrorism, terror, terror, Afghanistan. Mullah, mullah, Saddam. 9/11, Al-Qaeda, 9/11, Saddam. Danger, 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 Bush. Unforeseen danger, incalculable danger, catastrophic danger. Read my book. Islam, America, hate, hate, hate. Ah, bad, bad, bad. All Muslims, all Americans, bad. Anthrax, mustard gas, nukes, stuff we've never even heard of. Buy my book. We are counting down to Armageddon, and I'm spending my final moments recording the success of a small group of secretive, insular, power-hungry, consciously violent people working against the common good and for their own gain, aided and abetted by a corporate-owned media which sensationalizes the mundane, the violent, and the stupid. And plus, I feel fat and balls out frustrated because in spite of going to school where the upper echelon achieving people go, that would be Yale, and spending years following the Good Little Actor Handbook, my career is circling the bowl, and I'm not making enough to get by, and I'm at a point in my life where when asked how old I am, I either lie or say, old enough to know I missed my frickin' boat. And really, I don't just want to be an actor. I want to be an uber-human pop culture PC diva. I want to be named the best actor of my generation by Vanity Fair so that I can drive a hybrid vehicle and live in an eco house I designed myself and set up foundations and charities and wear a hemp gown when I win my Academy Award and set some highly righteous trends. And even apart from the acting career, I should have done something big by now. I'm good with the big ideas. Like, I should have convinced the Bush administration to sign the Kyoto Accords. Or figured out a way to sop up excess greenhouse gases with a giant atmospheric maxi pad. Enough. I gotta get back to work. Transcribing the fall of civilization.
Thank you. I love it. There's just so much energy.
Thank you.
It's just like this stream of consciousness wanting.
Yeah.
All the things we want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Catherine Bloom is with us. She has a one-woman show, The Accidental Activist. So in the show, you take the audience through this sequence of events, including your apology letter that's printed in the Yemen Times. Then you do some brainstorming about strategies with a friend. It moves into getting some financial support and advice from your mother-in-law. Was there ever one event or one moment in this sequence where you said, yes, I'm going to do something big? Or were you just pulled along by this contagion?
I was really pulled along, and it's funny because I had been working on a screenplay that was an adaptation of Lysistrata, a modern adaptation, an environmental story. And it was moving slowly, but, you know, moving along. And then I heard about this group in New York called THAW, Theaters Against War, and they had just gotten started in December, and they were planning a day of action on March 2nd. And my original thought was, oh, I'll read the screenplay. It'll be you know, a deadline, which is always good, to try to get the thing done. And then I thought, you know what? It's probably not going to get done. Why don't I do something easier and just do a reading of Lysistrata? And that'll help me learn more about the play and its effect on people and what parts of the story are most effective. And it'll be my contribution. And that's really all I intended to do. And then I had this thought about where I could do it, because I had, because of my tendonitis, I hadn't been working for a couple of months, so I didn't have any money to rent a big space or anything. And then I remembered a friend of my husband's who I'd met once, who is an actor and the casting director at a theater in New York, and I thought, well, maybe she could get them to donate the space. And I happened to get an email from her the day I got that idea. And she wanted my husband, who runs a theater in Vermont, to bring her up and do a show there. And I said, well, you know, I can't help you with that, but how about you work on this reading with me? And she said, wow, that sounds great. Let's do it. And we started having one of those yes and conversations where ideas just kind of exploded. And we thought, well, let's do it as a benefit for humanitarian aid in Iraq. And then let's do it in more than one place. And hey, why don't we do it everywhere? And we'll call it the Lysistrata Project. And but even then, we thought, you know, if we get a few readings in this country, we know a few folks around the world, that would be great. And what we didn't expect was that when we emailed everyone we knew with the idea, we hit a moment in time when people were so desperate and so frustrated and so discouraged. And we provided them with a fun, creative, non-standing in the streets holding placards and chanting slogans way of expressing their dismay and outrage and sorrow over what was happening. You know, it's funny because I got the idea on a Saturday afternoon, and by Sunday evening, I had emailed NPR through the NPR website directly to Susan Stamberg, because I know she likes theater. And I said, I want to let you in on the ground floor of this really great idea that I have. But it was a little bit, there was a little bit of hubris on my part because we didn't actually have anything other than an idea. But I had faith in the idea. And then NPR called the next week and we were interviewed on All Things Considered. And I think that was a stamp of legitimacy that helped move things along. But we never expected it to get as big as we did. And at one point we thought, oh man, if we got 50 readings, that'd be great. And then we thought, 200 readings, that'd be incredible. And then 500 readings. And about a week before, somebody said, you're going to hit 1,000. And we thought, oh, no way. And midnight, moving from the 2nd to the 3rd of March, we hit 1,000 readings. And we're still hearing from people who say, you know what, we just found out about this project. We're doing our own reading. And I would bet there are probably 500 to 1,000 readings we never even heard about. So it took on a life of its own really, really fast.
We're talking with Catherine Bloom, co-founder of the Lysistrata Project. Recap the play for us a little bit.
Well, the play takes place in ancient Greece many thousands of years ago during the Peloponnesian War, and it's been going on for about 20 years. And the women are really fed up, but they don't have a political voice in their society. And so this woman, Lysistrata, gets a bug in her toga and has an idea to deny the men of their country sex until they stop fighting. And she gathers women from all the opposing states, all the sides of this conflict, and says, the only way we're going to stop this is if we all participate. And so all of these women agree to close up shop, and then they take over the Acropolis where all the money is stored, because they figure that's the other piece of it. We got to control the money. And they continue their boycott until the men become so preapically challenged that they have to agree to the women's demands. And it's very saucy, very dirty, very funny. And what's amazing to me is that it resonates now.
Let's listen to an excerpt of KUNM's reading of Lysistrata.
And if we really should abstain, heaven forbid, from what you say, do you suppose that on that account peace might come to be?
I'm absolutely sure. If we sit around made up with nothing on but a transparent negligee and come up to them with our deltas plucked quite smooth, and then once our men get stiff and want to come to grips, we do not yield to them at all but push them away, while they'll make a truce in no time. There's no doubt of that.
In Sparta, we say that when Menelaus, Helen of Troy's husband, saw her bare breasts, he just threw away his sword.
And what if our husbands throw us away?
Well, you know what the oracle at Delphi said, know thyself.
It isn't worth wasting the candle. I hate cheap substitutes. But what if they seize us and drag us by brute force into the bedroom?
Hang on to the doors.
And if they hit us?
Then you must give in, but nastily, and do it badly. Men don't enjoy it when they have to force you. And then just keep tempting them. They'll soon give up. A man can't enjoy himself unless his wife enjoys it, too.
Now, if both of you are for this plan, then so are we.
Well, we Spartans will persuade our men to keep the peace sincerely and with honor. But what about this democratic mob of Athens? Can anyone persuade them to honor their agreements?
Don't worry. We'll persuade our men. They'll keep the peace.
No, they won't. Not so long as they have battleships afloat and endless money stored up in the Acropolis.
I've already thought of that. We're taking over the Acropolis today. The oldest women have their orders, and while we're meeting here, they have gone up to the fortress, as if to make sacrifices to Athena. But really, they're seizing the Acropolis and everything in it.
I must admit, your plan sounds very smart.
Then what are we waiting for? Let's take an oath to bind us firmly to our plans.
Tell us what that oath is, and we'll all swear.
All right. Somebody find a shield and someone else get a victim.
Lysistrata!
That's an excerpt from Albuquerque's production of Lysistrata, as heard on KUNM. It was directed by Lane Conway. We're talking with Catherine Bloom. What is it about the play that does continue to resonate?
Because war and sex are pretty eternal. And I think the play itself proves that all of the sort of issues between genders that we experience, we sometimes even think as modern or endemic to just our own time, they go back as far as humanity does. And the fact that we really haven't dealt with any of those issues, I think an ancient Greek person could read a copy of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus translated into Greek and ancient Greek, and they would completely relate to it. So I think it's the universal nature and the sort of thorny dilemma of war and the fact that conflict and violence seem to be endemic to the human condition. And it's an extremely challenging thing to overcome. And that there are always people in power and always people who don't have power. And the struggle to make your voice heard seems to also be very universal.
Right. And in the play, the women use their power.
They use the only power they have. Yeah. And a lot of people said to us, so are you advocating using sex as a tool for political change? And we said, absolutely not, because we're both married and we would hate for those kind of bedroom politics to be a part of our marriage. What we were emulating was a group of people making a creative choice about how to deal with their problems.
So I wonder if that's part of the evolution of humans, is that we'll find some other source of power. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the most important thing is for people to just come to the conclusion that violence isn't an option. It's not that there's never going to be conflict. There's always going to be conflict. Well, there's always conflict within ourselves. The question is, how do we respond to it? And do we allow ourselves to have the tool of violence in our bag of tricks? Or do we say, you know what, no matter what, that's just not an option?
Catherine, let's talk about feelings. There are a lot of feelings in your show. In your show, The Accidental Activist, you express anger about a lot of things. Environmental destruction, mistreatment of American Indians, George Bush, and lots more issues.
SUVs, throwaway coffee cups, yeah.
What role does anger play in activism? And more specifically, does anger really fit in the peace movement?
Absolutely, because anger is a part of human nature. You know, you can't choose how you feel. you can choose how you respond. And so there's plenty in the world to make you angry. The question is, are you going to act out of anger or let that anger be kind of the base fuel, but transform it with things like love and compassion into action? Anger is like adrenaline. Anger is like gasoline. Anger is like, the passion of the beginning of a love affair. It's a great fuel for getting you started, but it doesn't help you sustain your activities over the long term. Now, there are people who have let their anger fuel their action their whole lives, but I don't think those are very happy people. And I think finding inner peace is just as important, and some would say tantamount to bringing peace into the world. And so you need to find a way to take your anger and say, yeah, okay, I'm angry about this, but why? Well, it's because there are things that I love, that I care about, that I feel are threatened or endangered. And to really do the best you can to act out of your love rather than your anger.
Another feeling that comes out in your play is guilt. And you talk about feeling guilty about being, things are too little or too late. Are peacemakers doing enough?
Oh, I don't even know how to answer that question. Enough. What's enough? Everybody's doing the best they can, and is it enough to end all conflict and violence? Is it enough to end, we're not going to end conflict. Is it enough to end all violence now? No. Is it enough to end all violence in 5 years? Probably not. But are we setting ourselves on a path so that we're heading down a road where we can envision someday we will end violence? Well, sure, why not? Eve Ensler, who created the Vagina Monologues, has set the goal of ending violence towards women in 10 years, something like that. Whether or not that specific goal is reached isn't as important as the good work that's done along the way. And I think, for all of us who've tried to set goals in our life, the goal is just a guide point. And it's what happens on the journey. And I don't mean to get all ooga-booga and ooky-spooky about it, but I think it's really true that you can't control what happens. You can't control other people. You can't control their response to you. So the best you can do is sort of have your guiding vision out there and then do the best you can to engage the world in small ways and big ways. It's how you treat your pet and your parents and your plants and your friends and the people with whom you're in conflict. It's every choice that you make in your life.
Right. It is all about choices. So for folks who are listening to us and they're thinking, I could either rent a movie and watch that this afternoon, or I could write some letters.
Or you could do both, because the movie is an enjoyable thing and it makes your life a better place to be. And hopefully, and it's not a movie that disturbs and alienates you even worse. But why not be fueled by that wonderful film that you want to watch and let that either be the fuel, then you promise yourself, I'm going to write the letters afterwards, or let it be the reward. I think denying ourselves pleasure for the sake of the struggle is a dangerous thing. That, too, I think leads to burnout. It's why we need artists, It's not just because we need someone to envision the future for us. It's because we need to be entertained. We need to be taken out of our troubles every once in a while, too.
Catherine, could we hear another piece from your show? I really love that spiritual intervention that your mother-in-law did.
Right. I should set this up by saying I've had the realization that I want to create a massive anti-war event, but I don't have any idea what it's going to be. And I'm up in Vermont for the holidays, and I'm having a post-holiday dinner with my husband and my mother-in-law. So, how's New York? Absolutely fantastic. I am writing the screenplay adaptation of Lysistrata, and I'm doing this big anti-war event for March. Good for you. What's the event? Well, I'm going to create this giant theatrical happening that will finally convince everyone that Bush is insane, and it'll start this massive public backlash against the administration and make it totally impossible for them to go to war. Goodness. And how will you do all this? Well, it'll be just so big and powerful and yet so moving, and it'll be covered by all the media, and it'll just touch everyone so deeply, you know, like that. I see. And who's going to help you with this event? Well, I just got the idea before I came up here, but as soon as I get back to New York, I'm going to start making some calls. You know, I think what's going to happen is that I'll meet people through the event and they'll want to produce my movie. You know, I have a friend who used to temp for Miramax. That's a film studio. They have offices in New York. And she said she could give me some names. I see. And have you had any auditions lately? No, but, you know, that's okay because I don't really have time. And are you still working at Transcripts? No, I got this wicked case of tendonitis. Oh, Kathy. Have you considered the idea that you might be grasping too tightly? No, I got one of those ergonomic keyboards. No, dear one. I mean to your dreams. My dreams? Yes, your projects. It sounds like you've got a very tight grip on everything right now. Yes, it's finally all coming together. It is? Yes? Really? Really? I don't need any free therapy, thank you. Little physical therapy, maybe. And then Mark says, you know, hon, the average person goes through 7 different careers in their lifetime. Do you think it might be time for a change? What? Well, you're not happy. Yes, I am. I've got all this great stuff I'm doing. Hon, you've got all this great stuff you're talking about doing. Well, that's the first step. Yeah, but that's all you ever do. Yeah, but I don't have time, hun. You got nothing but time. You just spent the last 10 days sleeping and eating ice cream. I'm on vacation. Yeah, but you never... Hey! Look. You have your own theater company. And you have your own private practice. Don't get down on me just because I haven't figured out how to make my dreams happen yet. That's not fair. Why can't you support me in this? It's not my fault. I want something impossible. If it's impossible, how much longer are you going to make yourself miserable? I'm not making myself anything. No, you're not. Hey! Catherine, why do you keep setting yourself up to fail? I'm not failing! That's because you never actually do anything? Hey! Catherine, what is the payoff in failing? Payoff? Oh. If you really want success, you need to do 2 things. 1, let go of the fantasies. And 2, take tangible action. If you want to make art and foster change, then pick an appropriate project. Produce it on an attainable scale, raise some money, and then do it again and again and again. But that's not enough. Attainable doesn't save the world. Does unattainable? Well, no, but...
Thank you.
Sure.
We're coming to the end of our program. Can we get the website for your project?
Yeah, it's called theaccidentalactivist.com.
Great. I'd like to thank our guest today, Catherine Bloom, co-founder of the Lysistrata Project. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was a delight. Peace Talks is a production of Good Radio Shows Incorporated and was recorded in the studios of KUNM in Albuquerque. Producer and engineer is Paul Ingalls. Music by Nick Lowe and Ali Adelman. I'm Suzanne Kreider. Thanks for listening.